Thank you, Steve. Good morning, one and all. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is off for today. We're both off tomorrow, and then the reuniting of Bill and Wendy on Monday, I believe. So sitting in Bill's chair today, yesterday it was Harry Tynowitz, and today it is Jimmy Mack.
Hello.
How are you?
Great.
Bertrand, this should be fun, because usually you and Bill team up on me. I'm anxious to see what happens.
Now, Jimmy Mack and I can...
You probably will.
I don't think so. I think I'm usually in your corner on most stories.
Oh, you're saying that because my husband is here today.
He knows.
Yeah, he listens. He knows. That's right. All right. I watched the debate last night. 10 people. I want to ask you, Bertrand, who do you think the winner was?
Well, I have to say I went out to Market Days in Highwood last night, so I didn't watch the debate.
You know, I felt the need to do it because Bill is
That's very kind of you.
Right. Yeah. And Jim, you didn't watch it. You were recording your podcast, Rebel Force Radio, last night.
Right. Yeah.
So I watched it with my son, Michael, and it was fun watching with him because we had to stop after every answer and have discussions about our country and about what they said.
Well, who do you think? Because, I mean, from what I hear, Elizabeth Warren did well, but everyone knew her going in.
Well, that's just it, Steve. I really only knew of her. Bill de Blasio I knew of. There's a guy that looks like Will Ferrell that I didn't really know who that was on the far right end. And Julian Castro really came on my radar last night. I thought he did a great job. I never heard of him.
No, I did hear that he did well, right.
He did a really good job. Elizabeth Warren, I don't think she won it, if you want to know my personal opinion.
How about Tim Ryan? Did he make an impact?
Tim Ryan, I had never heard of him as well.
Ohio congressman.
Yeah, he had some moments with the Hawaiian representative. I should have all their names in front of me. I should just call her Yo Gabba Gabba or whatever her name is. Isn't that a show? A kid's show?
Oh, I don't know. But so we were talking in here that we should sneak in like a pretend candidate because you wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know. Tim Ryan was going head to head with I have to find her name, Gabby somebody.
You know, I'm embarrassed to say
I was counting on you for this. I told Jim, don't worry, don't stay up late. You know, I can talk to Bertrand about this. But I don't remember her name, but they kind of went head to head. There was really no rhyme or reason to things. And I guess my biggest question is placement of the podiums.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yes. She, I thought, was very good, but not strong enough.
She came back with not knowing her name still, but felt really good about her.
Well, I had never heard of her before. Yeah. I still don't remember her name. It's not a household name anymore. She did several tours in Iraq, so she had things to add. Beto O'Rourke was a little awkward.
And I've got my microphone turned on.
Wow, and he does a great Orion Samuelson. It's amazing. I mean, you should even do Max Armstrong. It's even better.
All right. I have turned Orion off, which I have plenty of times. Trust me. So Tim Ryan seemed like a hothead to me.
Hothead?
Yes.
Well, his whole thing is like, I'm speaking for the little guy.
Right.
No one else. Everyone else is sort of speaking down to the little guy. I'm a little guy. That's kind of his approach, because he's out of Youngstown, Ohio, so a manufacturing area that, you know, has been really suffered. And he's saying, he's telling us, I'm one of you, I'm one of us.
And when that message came out, I liked it, but he got very hot under the collar, and I was told that the way the podiums are set up is your first tier options are in the middle, and then as they span out to the side, those are the people that are...
It's by polling, I think, right?
Yes. Yes, it is by polling.
So Warren was in the middle.
Yes. And I got to be honest with you, there were times that I wondered why only the main candidates got to speak. They kept saying, everyone, we'll hear from everyone, and we did. But, you know, the questions, Cory Booker I thought he did a decent job last night, too. It was pretty interesting. Not spending a lot of time talking about it because it's just like the halftime show right now because the other 10 candidates are tonight.
Right. And as it turns out, the bigger names are tonight in many ways.
I mean, right.
You had Warren yesterday, Booker yesterday, but Biden,
Kamala.
Sanders, Harris all tonight. But, you know, I don't know exactly what the purpose of these debates are or is, because I don't know that you can really learn anything. Someone's got to get a great sort of punch. One punch, you know, they got to knock someone out in one punch to make an impact. But otherwise, and even then, what's the value of that? I don't know quite what we get out of a debate with 20 people over
either.
Two nights.
I don't either.
Because you're going to see so little of anyone that it's, I don't know, I don't see great value in it there.
And it's going to be the Biden-Bernie show tonight, pretty much.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I might watch tonight.
Was there a technical glitch that happened during the... Can you explain to me
Chuck
what happened?
Todd was asking a question to Elizabeth Warren about the kids in Parkland. And after the shootings, they've really stood up and they've become advocates for change in America. He asked the question the first time and Elizabeth was like, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. And you could hear talking in the background. It sounded like they left Lester Holt's mic on. And who is that? Savannah
Guthrie?
I love her. I was not that familiar with her before. I'm sorry. I don't really like politics, but it's funny, I'm the only one that watched the debate last night.
She's the host of the Today Show.
I don't ever watch the Today Show. She is adorable and really good. Chuck Todd was asking this important question about Parkland, and he was unheard, so he repeated it. And again, you could hear like off mic talking. And then finally, he just said, yes, there are technical difficulties, so we're going to take a commercial break and come out. And the question was asked for the third time, and then it was answered.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were able to skip a commercial break as things were rolling. But it was crazy. I will be watching tonight, but I have to tell you right now, if I hear the word gerrymander one more time.
It's a big story. It's a monumental story in many ways. I mean, it has a huge impact in how we're governed and why we argue with each other.
I've heard the term used. I got to be honest with you. I had to look it up. The practice of drawing district lines to favor your own party.
Right.
Where did this word come from? I quiz you, Steve Bertrand.
It's the 19th century, and I don't remember exactly. I don't think it was someone's name, but I think it came out of the post-Civil War era.
It was used for the first time in the Boston Gazette on March 26, 1812. The word was created in reaction to a redrawing of Massachusetts state Senate election districts under Governor Elbridge Gerry.
There you go.
Gerry. So, I had to look it up.
So, you know, and you, the courts have ruled that you can't gerrymander out races, right? You can't try to dilute the
African American voter. Like change the boundaries.
Well, that's what they do. Every 10 years, they change the boundaries of the legislative races or the districts. So, one of these cases involved a Democratic seat in Maryland, I think. Another was Republicans in North Carolina. It's being shown as, you know, being. The Republicans benefit from this because they're the ones who are redrawing the maps the most. But you don't. It's not the case perfectly. I mean, Illinois is a perfect example of the problem of it. The Democrats control the legislature here, so they can draw the lines any way they want to sort of marginalize Republican legislators to make it easier for the Democrats to win and win and win and win. And so what happens is you end up with Democratic districts, and then you have Republican districts. And so you, when it comes time to vote and choose representatives, it all the game is in the primary, because there are so many Democrats in this district, a Democrat's going to win. So it all depends on who's going to win the Democratic primary, right? You following me?
Yes.
So that's how we become more liberal and more conservative in our representation. In a Republican district, a Republican's going to win in November no matter what, so the challenge really is in the primary, and you've got two conservatives going at each other. Only the Republicans are choosing it, and they come further and further to the right. Just like in the Democratic districts, they move further and further to the left, and then we have extreme representation in Washington.
Well, that makes sense, and there's a big
ruling. The test will be tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I just had heard it all morning, and I've heard the word used, and I'm sorry. I had to look it up and find its origin and exactly what it meant.
So the courts have ruled on it when it comes to race or, you know, other issues like that, but they're saying when it comes strictly to partisanship, partisan issues, the court seems, they said that they don't really have a say in that. Now, others might dispute that, but the court gets the final say in it.
Very interesting. See, you learn something from Steve Bertrand every day, don't you, Jim?
Oh, yeah.
Every day, Jim?
Every day. Yeah. There's not a day that goes by.
All right. Jimmy Mack is sitting in Bill Leff's chair today, and Bill and Wendy will be back in action in full force on Monday. Coming up, we're going to talk to Dean Richards, and both Jim and I absolutely love watching Big Brother.
Yes.
It's the 21st season of it. I am embarrassed to say I've watched all but one.
Hmm.
You've watched all of them pretty much.
Yeah, it's just great escapism in the middle of the summer. Sure, I called it dumb, but it's fun dumb, and I love it.
All right, well, we are going to talk to someone from Rockford, Illinois, who is on his way into the WGN studios, and he was on the very first season of Big Brother. We're going to find out what is fabricated, what is edited. I'm anxious to talk to him. Dean Richards will be here, and we're going to talk about some weird things that families do. We'll do that after the 10:30 news. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Jimmy Mack. It's 720 WGN. I hate to talk over Weird Al. It's Jimmy Mack in for Bill Leff. I'm Wendy Snyder. And pizza is quite delicious. It doesn't last. We don't typically have very many leftovers because a lot of times we'll just eat the pizza when we order it.
Wolf it down.
But the big question that everybody's been wondering, how long does pizza last in your fridge?
That's a good question. And it depends on how you store it. Of course, I know a lot of people get lazy and they just shove the cardboard box with the leftovers into the fridge.
You're talking about yourself.
I said some people. and I may qualify.
I put it in baggies.
Yeah, I find it best to put it in baggies, Ziploc baggies, or even foil. But if you just put it in the fridge,
it dries out.
It'll dry out real fast if it's in the box. So only a couple days in that case. Usually when we order a pizza on Friday nights, I am disposing of leftovers, if there are any, by Monday morning.
So
is that
Friday,
too soon?
Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Is that too soon?
3 days. All I know is my brother, when we all lived at home in the Snyder house growing up, my brother would order a pizza. And he would share it with his friend Ed and not share it with the rest of us.
Right.
And my sister and I and mom would smell pizza and wonder where it was. So in the morning, we would want to go have cold pizza.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't find it. For some reason, in our family, we took the leftover pizza and put it in the oven. Not with the oven turned on, but that's where we kept it. Mm. I don't know if we had a mouse issue. I just know we never put it in the refrigerator. It was just in the oven. So you'd smell it in the morning. You'd go, oh, I'm going to open the oven and have some pizza, room temperature pizza for breakfast. We smelled the pizza. We couldn't find the pizza. My brother had this wooden, it was like a piece of plywood on wheels under his bed that my grandfather made for him for a racetrack. And my brother would just put the pizza box on the racetrack and slide it under his bed. So we never even refrigerated it when I was growing up, and we never got botulism.
Under bed pizza. Yeah, that is true. If you leave something out that's been cooked, usually I think about 2 hours is max before you start to need to be thinking about putting it in the fridge because of bacterial growth.
Look at you. Have you been watching the Food Network or something?
Well, no, I just, you know, I'm particular about leftovers. And even yesterday at home, we had empanadas that were sitting out on the countertop for several hours after we had ordered them. And I put them in the fridge. And there was even some debate about that.
Well, because Michael ate it like a minute after you put it in the fridge. So, and you heat something up, the bacteria is killed. And that's why microwaves are great.
Well, I mean, that's the risk you want to take.
All right. Well, according to food safety expert Janilyn Hutchings, she is a state food safety food scientist.
She's a good one. She's a good one.
And a certified professional in food safety. Mm-hmm. Pizza will stay good in the refrigerator for 3 to 4 days. To help ensure freshness, Hutchings suggests storing it in an airtight container rather than refrigerating it in the box it came in.
Right.
I will tell you something. If you put it in a Ziploc bag and you don't get the air out of it, there's a lot of condensation, and then your pizza gets wet.
Well, do you people fast between meals or something? How does a pizza box last for 3 days in your refrigerator? Leftover pizza.
Because you have to take it out every time you want to take something else. It's kind of just there like Jenga.
But I didn't mean the box. I meant the leftover pizza.
Like, why is it there?
It's gone in 12 hours, usually. You eat it.
lately, I think I've been getting too much pizza because there have been leftovers.
Well, see, what happens is that there'll be leftover pizza in our fridge, and they'll order another pizza. So
well,
we run
Dylan
into
doesn't
some
like
backups.
Leftovers. I don't blame him. And if I may just say, I know a lot of people microwave pizza the next day. I read this online. It was a life hack on how to reheat pizza. You take a frying pan and you, on a slow heat, I cover it so the cheese gets melted, and then you can turn the heat up a little bit, so it's pretty great.
Yeah, but sometimes it makes the crust a little too well done for my taste.
That's why you keep medium heat. You go all the way to high. When you're making eggs, it's like high heat, and then I have to buy new skillets all the time. But that is it. Just so everyone knows, the weekend is coming. If you have leftover pizza, which Steve Bertrand does not usually have in his house, it will be good in the refrigerator for 3 to 4 days. We are solving the world's problems. That's what we do right here on WGN. Thank you, Bertrand. Bill Leff is off today. Jimmy Mack is sitting in for him today.
Hey, hey.
And I'm Wendy Snyder. Bertrand, I heard you mention that the dad from ALF died.
Yeah.
Max Wright?
Max Wright.
I really never got into ALF too much. Our youngest son, Dylan, has been binge-watching ALF, so he is going to be really upset about this. And you said you were going to save this for when Bill was back, but you really couldn't.
Yeah, no.
I'm sure.
And then you gave me the Bill reaction. I saw your head pop up.
I know. I yelled, what? And also, and I feel really bad I don't know this actor, Billy Drago, actor in the Untouchables series. He, his career spanned 4 decades. He appeared in over 100 films, including Clint Eastwood's classic 1985 Western Pale Rider. Did you see that, Jim?
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
He was best known for his work playing Al Capone's top henchman in The Untouchables.
He was Frank Nitti in The Untouchables.
Oh, he was on The X-Files and Charmed. He was 73, and he died as well. All right.
Would you have to one-up me? Is that what the thing is
No,
here?
I just, you know, I'm wondering if Bill Leff ever mentioned either of these names. I think we talked about Max Wright.
Oh.
I like to blame Bill.
I don't know why it is that I watched ALF, but maybe it was on, like, in the afternoon or something, you know, in syndication.
Yeah, it's still on.
Well, I know, but I don't know why I was watching, but I do remember watching ALF quite a bit.
I never really, alien life force.
There was a real character in that puppet. There was a real person.
There was not.
There was.
There was. How do you think they pulled that off? It had to have been a puppet.
It was a 3-foot person.
I guess. I guess I didn't watch it that much. All right. Weird things that people's families do that they thought were normal until they were told otherwise. I found this on Reddit. And
is hosting radio show with your wife on that list?
No, and we used to do a podcast called Snide Remarks Radio. And we did that for years, many years ago. And I felt like that was our marriage therapy because we saved our fights for the podcast. They're still available on Libsyn. I have not done a really good job keeping up our website. SnideRemarksRadio.com.net, whatever. Just Google Snide Remarks Radio.
I think the shows are still on iTunes as well.
All right. Well, we would save our fights for Sunday afternoons. We'd open up some cocktails. The kids would raise themselves, and we would have cocktails and do a podcast. And quite honestly, it was great marriage therapy because I didn't want to sound bitchy in front of people who were listening, so I think I was nicer when I aired some issues that I had with you and you as well.
Oh, very cathartic. Very cathartic.
It kind of was.
Yeah.
So that would not be a weird thing. Well, I guess most families don't do podcasts and radio shows together. But here was the first one, which reminds me of a story. Somebody said, my family and I would frequently talk about our bowel movements, and I had a conversation about it with one of my close friends, and they told me that that wasn't normal. There are weird family dynamics out there. I remember there was one Thanksgiving. I like to host Thanksgiving, and that's usually the one time of the year that our dining room table is cleaned off, which I've mentioned.
Time.
No, it's not too bad right now. And we had, my sister brought a friend over for dinner. And this was about the time Dylan was being potty trained. And there's a powder room right off of our dining room. And Dylan managed to go number two. And we were all very proud of him. And we wanted to make a big deal about it. So we all went in there and looked at it and clapped. And we asked my sister's friend, Char, would you like to go in there and see, you know, what Dylan did? And she said, no, thank you. And I realized she has not come back ever again.
Never again. Ever. Nobody's seen or heard from her. In years.
Well, you had to make a big deal about a kid using the potty.
There was a line going out the hallway into the bathroom. People were taking selfies with the toilet bowl. It was incredible.
No, that's not. I may have taken a picture of it. I may have. All right, some other things. And if you have weird things that your family does that you found out later that you're the only family who does it, 312-981-7200. My family does this thing where whoever's birthday it is, they have to eat the first piece of cake without talking. So, you know, while you're cutting it, you know, you blow out the candles, somebody cuts the cake and you can't talk till you take a bite of it and it has to be the first piece. So everyone in our family would try to make the birthday person talk by saying funny things. And if you spoke while eating your first piece, you had to finish your slice under the table. My grandparents told us it was a German tradition, but no one else had ever heard of it.
Well,
this is we did not say the word fart, and we still don't. It's always so-and-so gassed. I didn't realize that this wasn't normal until much later in life, and I still feel weird saying that particular F word out loud.
I'll never be able to listen to Jumping Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones the same way again.
Oh, it's a gas, gas, gas. My wife's family does this thing where they clap out the number of years on someone's birthday. It actually drives me insane because it's something they not only do for my kids, but they do it for me.
The clapping.
Of how many years you are.
Oh, boy.
God, you'd be clapping forever for me. This, my family did, and I'm sure we're not the only one. This from Reddit, weird things that your families do that no one else has ever heard of. My parents store batteries in the refrigerator to keep them fresh.
Yeah.
We always did that.
Yeah, that's not as uncommon.
I assume this was just the common practice for battery storage, so I did the same when I moved out of their house. The look on my husband's face when he saw batteries in our refrigerator said it all. We kept batteries in the refrigerator all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're just in a junk drawer. And I've realized that if you keep them loose and there are 9-volt batteries and they come into contact with one another, it could cause a spark, which could cause a fire.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to have to go experiment with this later on.
Mm-hmm. This came up in our family on New Year's Eve. My grandmother is Italian. Was Italian. She's no longer with us. And we had this family tradition of eating what at the stroke of 12?
The green grapes. I was actually thinking this is a great example of something our family does that...
Your family didn't, but no, this is totally from my family.
Our family.
Our immediate, yes.
Yes.
You and me and the kids.
You and me are the vows we took to... But, you know, all of that. Remember that?
Yes. But, I mean, you had never heard of it. And the stroke of 12 at midnight, you're supposed to, the first thing you have before champagne, before anything, you're supposed to eat some green grapes, seedless green grapes. And that's supposed to mean that you will have money for the year to sustain yourself.
I say we also incorporate the birthday silence into New Year's, so you can't talk until you've eaten the green grapes.
You're just trying to get me not to talk, aren't you? It's going to be the only rule for me. And there was one year that they were out of green seedless grapes at the Jewel, Dominic's at the time, now Mariano's.
Yeah.
So my sister suggested getting a can of that fruit cocktail, and we grabbed the green grapes that were in, the goopy, syrupy green grapes that were in there, but we had to have it.
You got
to
do what you got to do.
When my family finishes off a carton of milk, we lay the carton on its side and say, the cow's dead.
What?
I only realized this wasn't normal recently since I was never the one to finish off the milk with anyone else I'd live with.
Mmm, the cow is dead. That's weird and morbid.
Bob has called us at 312-981-7200. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I never thought I'd be discussing the fascination with bowel movements on the radio, but... I come from an Irish-American family, and that seemed to have been their primary interest at gatherings. And about 2 years ago, I went to what's called the Irish Famine Museum in Cork, Ireland. Mm.
Did you go through Steve Berntrad travel by any chance?
No.
Ah, you should next time. All right, County Cork.
Okay, we had a docent there, and she explained that the Irish diet consisted of 8 pounds of potatoes a day and 2 pounds of cabbage.
Mm-mm.
Okay? Obviously, there is a need to get rid of that, and apparently it has survived hundreds of years.
Mm.
And I really think that's what it is, because my grandparents were fascinated by that.
Well, I think more people than you think discuss number two, but I could be wrong.
So how fast can you pass a potato?
Bob, thank you for calling. We appreciate it.
All right, bye.
When my mom made cookies, she would lay the cookies out to cool in rows. Each kid got a row, and once your row was gone, you had no more.
That's fair.
It is. That's actually a lot of cookies. It was pretty funny when my fiance was visiting and asked if he could have another cookie, and I asked him if he'd already had his row. He was shocked because in his house, it was every man for himself.
Yeah, that's how it is in our house.
So, bizarre things. Bertrand, do you have any bizarre things that your family does?
Oh, I do, absolutely.
Any that you'd like to share?
Not a one.
Really? here's another
like,
one.
Wait a second. Don't let
Mary,
him
what about you? There are some weird, quirky things.
I want to hear weird Bertrand stories.
Yeah, I don't know.
There has to be one. There has to be one. One thing your family does that's out of the ordinary or weird that you can share with us.
I really can't think of anything. I'll think about it. But
all right, here's
I'm not hiding, Jim.
But, you know, and it is funny because you do something in your family and it becomes tradition, and then all of a sudden you realize, wait, you don't do that too? Here's another one from Reddit. These are strange things that families do that you thought were normal until you talk to other people. My family always kept the butter out to keep it soft, which they say on the food shows now that you should keep it out.
As you say, that's not we do that.
But again, you run into that bacterial issue with the food being exposed to that.
You're too afraid of germs, Jim.
I am.
Listen, yeah. I love you, all right? And I love your mother. My mother-in-law is great.
He's right here.
I know, but I'm telling you this.
Oh, you're talking to Jim.
Your mom makes things with mayonnaise and leaves it sitting out for a very long time. And I'm telling you, none of us have died. She grew up in the South. They used to keep stuff out all the time. We're too worried about that now.
Still.
And your bacteria issues.
There's bacteria everywhere. You have to be careful.
Everyone I come across now wants to throw my butter away or put it in the fridge when they see it out. I hate hard butter. That is true. When you leave it out, it goes on the bread so much more smoothly.
Yeah, but doesn't it get too melty if you leave it out?
Not real butter.
It starts to lose its consistency.
Not real butter.
Okay.
And eggs, I've realized, when we had some neighbors who had chickens, and now mm-hmm. everybody has chickens, mm-hmm. and they would get the eggs and just leave them in a basket on the counter. And I thought, oh my God, you're going to get, I don't know what you get from it, botulism, E. coli, I don't know. But evidently, you don't need to refrigerate eggs.
Well, the chickens don't do it, so why should we?
They come out fine in the end.
And that is where it comes out. Thanks, Bertrand. We're going to take a quick break. Speaking of chickens, George Boswell was on the first season of Big Brother. There are already some texts of other people that watch Big Brother besides you and me, Jim. And Nick DiGilio is a big fan as well. George was known as Chicken George because they did have chickens on Big Brother and he tended to them. So right. He's going to be in the studio with us at 11. Dean Richards at 11:30, and then you can join us for the stream, the bonus hour on WGN Extra at noon. But if you have any weird family things that you really didn't find to be weird until you talked to another family, 312-981-7200. It's Jimmy Mackin for Bill Leff. I'm Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Is off today. Bill and Wendy back in full form on Monday. Jimmy Max in his chair today. And crazy stories that you do in your family that you thought were pretty normal until you talk to someone else. And then you go, oh, that's really weird. My mom always washed apples with dish soap. so I have done the same. I had no idea it was weird until my sister-in-law jokingly mentioned it in a group text. My response was, wait, that's not normal. I still do it to this day.
Doesn't that give you a soapy-tasting apple?
Not if you rinse it off.
That's weird.
Well, they say that there's pesticides on fruit and vegetables, so they make those vegetable brushes.
Hmm.
You're supposed to wash them. I just kind of rinse it off.
Dishwashing soap would be the answer there, but hey, whatever.
My best friend growing up used to think it was normal to just take silverware from any restaurant she went to. It wasn't until I pointed out to her that it wasn't normal and made her return her fork, and then she stopped. It was then that I understood why her family had an overabundance of silverware that didn't match. My grandma was notorious for taking pretty much everything, not silverware, but the crackers, everything in the bread basket would be in her purse by the end of the meal. Betty has called us, 312-981-7200. Hey, Betty, how's it going?
Oh, just fine. What we had to do is on Thanksgiving morning, we all had to slap the raw turkey before putting it in the oven.
Slap it?
I got to tell you, it's fun to slap a raw turkey.
I know. And then when I got married and I went to my in-laws and the turkey was in the oven, I asked, well, did we all slap it? Did everyone slap it? And, of course, they thought I was insane. But I thought it was a family. You know, I thought everybody did it.
That's really funny. Do you still do it to this day?
Well, I do. My kids think I'm nuts. But, yes, I make them all slap it and they just roll their eyes.
I slap it every year.
Yeah,
I really do. Because
I know there's something about it.
It is kind of fun. I got to tell you, if you've never slapped a raw turkey, Bertrand, don't sigh.
I'm going to listen to the Jillier tonight.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Doesn't Nick do an out of context thing?
Yeah, yeah,
thing?
Whatever.
Oh, this is some prime material for
Betty,
him.
Well, Betty, you may be featured.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome. I am the one who prepares Thanksgiving dinner. That's my favorite holiday because we all get together. We usually play animal bingo. My sister puts together all these cute little gifts. It's super fun. I usually drink mimosas all morning long when I'm cooking. And you help me get the turkey in the oven every year. And like after I rinse it off, there's something about it. I just...
You want
makes
to slap
a funny
that
sound,
sucker, right?
It's just fun to do.
It is fun. It is fun to
You'll
slap
do it,
it
this year. Stop.
It's,
no,
it's a
you're
lot
not
of fun to slap.
No.
It's
See, now,
so much fun.
That's
to
not
slap
out
it.
Of context.
What? That is no
once a year.
Oh, Kathy, I am so sick of men. How are you, Kathy?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good. What do you do that no other families do?
Oh, man, this is something I've been trying to figure out. The night before Easter. We, as a child, every year had to make a nest for the rabbit with our underwear.
With the underwear?
Yes. And put it in the living room. And then the Easter Bunny would come and put his candy there. And then as I raised my children, I did the same for them. And, of course, you know, they caught on and started hauling out all of their underwear. Making a bigger nest. Now my children are married, and their spouses looked at them like they were crazy because, and I honestly, and you know what? So many of my relatives do this, and we can't figure out how it all got started.
Underwear.
Well, I could see where you'd make a nest for the Easter Bunny, but I would think maybe like some straw or some ripped up newspapers, but your underpants, that's pretty funny.
Yes.
You know what's commonly heard around her house Easter morning? Hey, those aren't milk duds.
Kathy, thank you very much for calling. We appreciate
it.
You're welcome. God. Oh, Jim, that's why I married you. All right, we are going to talk to George Boswell, who was on the first season of Big Brother. I'm very anxious to talk to him because the new season just kicked off this week. You're one behind already. It's like... four times a week or something. Mm-hmm. It is our summer pleasure. You say guilty pleasure. I don't think so. But we'll talk to Chicken George Boswell from the first season of Big Brother after the news. And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all happening right here, 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. Go ahead and say it, Jim. You say it every night.
The stakes have never been higher.
And then the hashtag.
But first.
He does that all the time. It's Bill Leff is off today, and he's not a fan of Big Brother at all. Jimmy Mack is sitting in for Bill today. You got me into Big Brother, and season one, so many years ago, George Allen Boswell was on the episode. You stood out right away. You were funny. You were sweet. It is so great to have you here today.
It's my honor to be here today.
I was telling everybody, Nick DiGilio, who works overnights, loves Big Brother as well. And I said, Chicken George is going to be on. And everyone's like, Ben Vereen? I said, no, the other one. Now, you were called Chicken George. There were chickens out in the backyard at the Big Brother house.
That is absolutely correct. That was on season number one. And the reason why they call me Chicken George, I was raised on a farm Winnebago, Illinois, just little town, okay? And since I had a farm background, I knew a lot about animals and everything else like this. And these people were all from the city. So I says, well, I could take care of these guys, you know.
Right up your alley.
Yeah, I said, this is so awesome. Hey, I got, you know, something to take care of. And it also gave me something to do. You got to understand, because you're locked up in there with absolutely nothing to do.
Okay, now the BB21 just premiered this week, this season. Two episodes in. Jim, you're one behind. You're there for 90 days, or a little over.
Sometimes longer, yes.
We see just a small portion of what's going on. You said there's really nothing to do. Really, what do you do?
Well, keep in mind, they really, especially in season number one, there was no outside contact whatsoever. No newspapers, absolutely nothing. You were with this group of people, and it was up to you to make up or to entertain or to do whatever you do. Sometimes even just to keep your sanity in there, because you're in there so long. Mm-hmm. You're in there for so long. And you would get bored out of your mind. And I'm really high strung anyway.
No.
Yeah, I'm really bad.
But you have to be careful, because you don't want to annoy other people. I feel like I'd be the first one kicked out, because I would start out really nice and then the true me would come out. Mm-hmm. And I would... It's so hard. You got to act, sort of, don't you?
That is absolutely correct. I always realized, okay, I always realized I was on television 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when I did it the first time, American Online was just kind of coming into play. We were on the internet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you could actually get it for free.
What if you picked your nose or something?
It's there.
I think people do worse than that.
I guess.
I think people do way worse than that.
Do you know that there's cameras in the bathroom?
I thought that was illegal.
Nope. There's bathrooms in the shower. There is, and they'll come right out and they tell you that there is cameras everywhere that you go in that house.
So what makes you come from what part of Illinois? Where is it that you said you're a farmer from?
I was raised on a farm in Winnebago, Illinois.
Okay, so you're a farmer from Winnebago, Illinois.
Not really a farmer.
Raised on a farm. All right, my question is, what makes you want to be on Big Brother? Where did you hear about this?
Yeah.
Was your video like that you submitted?
Especially back then, reality TV wasn't the thing it is now. That all really happened with Survivor, and Big Brother launched right after Survivor.
What makes you want to be on this show?
I didn't even care, okay? This all started out as a joke. Okay, back then, the internet wasn't, I was not computer savvy or anything else like this. We seen a little thing in a newspaper, a little article, just one by one, it's little things that we're looking for people to do a television show. If you have any unique characteristics or whatever have you, make up a video, send in this application, and we'll see what ends up happening. So I go on ahead, and I just fill out this application with just a bunch of dumb stuff.
For instance?
Okay, they asked what your favorite show was, and I put down, like, Eliminate and the Flintstones and stuff like that, okay? Because I didn't care.
Right.
You know, I had a good life, okay? I wasn't looking for anything else like this. So then I borrowed a camera from one of them giant, huge things from my sister-in-law, and I said, we made this tape up in the backyard of my house, okay? Hi, I'm George and everything else like that. So I make this tape up. And then I forgot all about it. I put it on top of the refrigerator.
Yeah, that's where you put everything.
Yeah, and I said, okay, I did this. It's cool. We did something pretty neat, okay? I go on ahead. And my daughter comes in. She goes, what'd you ever do with that thing that you filled out for that television show? I go, well, it's sitting on top of the TV. And I go, well, you know, it's due today or tomorrow in California. I go, well, they're not going to pick me. I'm just some guy from, you know, lives...
Illinois.
Yeah, I'm a roofer guy that's from Illinois. What are they going to want with me, okay? So she goes, well, you did it. You might as well take it down the post office. So I go down to the post office. The lady says it's going to charge me $15 to airmail it to California.
Because the due date had happened.
Right. And I go, man, I'm not spending $15 bucks. Like this is my pizza and like Blatt's beer money. So I turned around, walked out of the post office, get to the doors. Okay. And you know, I thought, man, I've blown $15 in a lot worse ways than this. So I go in, I mail the thing. Well, lo and behold, I get this call to come to Chicago. They go, hey, we'd like to talk to you about this. So I go, well, okay, I'll go to Chicago today. Kind of neat, okay. So I get on my clothes. I wear my, like, Beavis and Butthead shirt. You know, and I go in there, and you go into this room, and there's this room, and the first thing, these producers come out, and they say, all right, we want nobody talking to nobody. There's supposed to be complete silence in this room. Well, I didn't care. You know, so I said, hey, dude, how's it going and everything else like this, you know.
That's why you got it, because yeah. There were other people trying. You were just like, well, whatever happens.
I didn't care. Okay. So I go on ahead. You meet with the producers, and you do these little board games, and you see how you interact with people and everything else like that. And, and then they just say, we will see you later. You know, it's the entertainment business.
Right.
And I go, well, this is cool. You know, I went down. I got to go downtown, had dinner and everything else like this. I go, I chalked this up to a winning day. I never, ever thinking that I would get a call.
And they called you. You're season one. We have to take a quick break. He is George Allen Boswell. Do you go by your middle name as well? Is that what you
just
want?
Just go with George. That'll work.
George Boswell. Chicken George from BB1. Somebody said, it's so good to hear Chicken George. He was wonderful on BB. So, good job. We'll take a quick break. And any Big Brother fans, we are here. 312-981-7200. It's Jimmy Mack. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It's Jimmy Mack in for Bill Leff. I'm Wendy Snyder. We're here with Chicken George, George Boswell, a house guest on Big Brother 1. And you also came back for an All-Star Series. What season was that?
That would have been season number 7.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So they obviously like you. You were asked back. Is Julie Chen nice? Because I love her and I love her wardrobe.
Julie Chen has not forgotten where she came from. I guess maybe that would be the best way to put it. Last year, I did a little appearance with them. Julie Chen actually come up. She asked, how's Teresa doing? How's my children? And that really meant a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, that she actually cares about people. Julie Chen is probably one of the most sincere, nicest people you will ever want to meet.
Love it.
And I go back a long ways with her.
Yeah.
Keep it back. We go back like 20 years. But I cannot say enough about her. And I can also not say enough about how she's been able to host the show to keep it going. Because she is, more or less, you would say, probably the heartbeat of the show.
She does a great job.
Mm-hmm. She is awesome. I love her.
And Julie Chen Moonves.
I love the way she conducts the proceedings.
That is absolutely correct.
She does an awesome job. Now, when you're in the house and you compete in the head of household competitions, etc., sometimes as a penalty, you will lose your food privileges. And George, refresh my memory. I seem to remember you going on an unusually long streak of eating nothing but this stuff they called slop. What is slop and what does it taste like?
Okay. I know you guys have probably never ate cement dust.
No.
Okay.
Not on purpose.
It is the most nastiest. It is absolutely horrible. It's like this ground up oatmeal thrown in with some stuff to keep you going. It is absolutely horrible. I did it for 60 days. I dropped.
Wow.
20-something pounds.
It's the Big Brother diet.
The all-slop diet.
Oh, it was horrible.
Slop.
But every once in a while, I would say they kind of thrown me a bone.
Literally a bone with no meat on it.
They might have a, okay, George, you can do pizza night with.
Oh.
So then I'd eat like three pizzas, and then I'd be able to keep going for quite some time.
Yeah.
All right. So you say behind the scenes they'd throw you a bone. What are we seeing viewer wise? Like when you saw your episodes later and they were edited, were they kind of right on par with what happened, or how much do they change it and edit it?
Okay. One thing I want you to know, especially about the Big Brother show, is this. They can only work with what you give them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? People always say that it's scripted or whatever, have like that. No, that's not the case. You are you. What you give them is what they work with. And
it's so interesting to watch because it's like, you know, the human emotional experiment, because you have to get with these people. I don't mean to offend you, but you were an older guy on the show.
Yeah.
All these young kids, sometimes the older house guests don't fare well. Mm-hmm. They seem to like you.
Yeah, I did. I adapted very well with them all. And for me, I made some really good friends out of
it. Do you stay in touch with anybody that we would know?
Oh, yes. For example, season one, they scattered. I have absolutely no contact with season one. But when we did the All-Star Edition, that is a really tight group of people, especially Dr. Will, Mike Boogie, Howie Gordon, for example,
Howie.
Danielle Reeves. We all still keep in touch with one another. You know, not as often as we probably would like, but we all have lives. But we all keep in contact. But we all did this really unique thing. We were all stars.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We were all stars.
I've noticed that, yeah, you did adapt to dealing with people sometimes decades younger than you.
Oh, absolutely.
Around the house. And they always isolate the person who's the oldest player. It seems like there's a lot of young players and then just one guy or girl in there who is, you know, a little bit outside of the average age range. I wish they would put two or three older people in there together. Yeah. It seems like an unfair handicap to have to deal with. But you did a great job.
Yeah, I made it to the end twice and lost.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah.
So are you happy for the winner, or were you just so unbelievably disappointed? I can't remember who won the first season.
Mike Boogie won the All-Star season.
Mike Boogie won. Eddie McGee.
I don't even remember
Eddie McGee.
Him.
Yeah, they were making potato clocks and
everything else like that.
The show changed a lot between season one and season two.
That is correct.
And it became more of a competition, like Survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, what are you doing now with yourself post-BB?
Okay, I have to tell you this. BB has been an absolute blessing for me. It opened up many, many different doors for me. I have what you would call probably one of the most, I don't even call it a job. I work for Mecum Classic Car Auctions. We have a show on NBC television.
Look at you.
Okay, where we travel around the country and we sell the finest collector cars in the world.
Wow.
Yes. That's a pretty cush job.
Yes, From what I used to do before and to what I do today, I had no idea that there was even a job out there like this. And it's just...
So they tracked you down to say, hey, are you interested in this?
I just kind of fell into that, too. You know, you just kind of fell into stuff. But I work for the company. The company's family-owned. I cannot say enough about what Big Brother, where I've traveled, what I've done. I work Las Vegas casinos and everything else like this. But I owe it all to them. They opened up the door, maybe just slightly. But what you do with it, you're on your own.
So you have no regrets about being on Big Brother?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you become a car collector as a result of your working on the show?
I'm what you call a low to mid-grade hoarder of everything. you see my garages, they're full of stuff. I'm a garage sale fanatic. I go to a lot of auctions and everything else like that there. I'm always buying stuff, yes.
How many tuxedo t-shirts do you own?
I have a whole complete closet full of them because I hate wearing suits and ties.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you pull it off.
Thank you very much.
You're one of those rare guys who can pull off the look.
Thank you.
Are you watching Big Brother now?
Oh, absolutely.
I love that show.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite yet? The new season has just started.
Not yet. I haven't really been able to pick a winner out of the pack yet. But we'll see when it comes down to the end. One thing, as I will tell you guys this, I'll make it real quick. If you watch the show, It's so hard on your mind. Watch when it goes down and how people start to break down.
That's what I'm thinking. Jim, I have thought maybe you should be on Big Brother. I honestly would lose it. I would miss my family. You have no connections with them unless you win head of household. And it just, you see people cry, and sometimes you're like, oh, come on. But it breaks you down.
Yep. For that long a period of time with no connection to nobody. And then the house starts to dwindle down, too. You got to understand that. Okay, there might be you and four other people in there, and you know everything about them. There's nothing more to know. And you, it just starts working on your mind, Jess.
Real feelings on Zingbot.
I'll let you take that one, Randy.
I kind of hate that thing, yet I'm very excited when Zingbot comes on. It's like a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. It throws a good comedic effect onto the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is a pleasure to meet you. He's George Boswell, and you might know him as Chicken George. Will we see you again on a future episode of Big Brother?
You never know.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. And where can we find you now and the new show you're involved with?
Okay, you can go to NBC, go to Meekum Classic Car Auction. You'll be able to watch it from there.
Pleasure to meet you.
It's been my honor.
And you've been a longtime WGN listener, huh?
Ever since I've been a child, yes. Farm Reports.
Orion.
Yes.
There you go. And you were on with Spike Odell after your first season.
That is absolutely correct.
How'd that go for you?
Absolutely fantastic. Couldn't have asked for a nicer host.
He gave you a lot of perks and stuff for coming up. Because we've got nothing. Jasmine, do we have a Lou Malnati's pizza we can give him or something?
Well, I was looking for a massage is what we're looking
Jim, about. Will you handle this?
Oh, yeah, sure. No problem.
Good luck to you. And please keep in touch. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's been my honor to be on your show.
George Boswell, Chicken George from BB1 and BB21 is going right now, and you can watch it. I don't know when it's on next, but it's on several times a week, and it's a great show. Not embarrassed to admit it.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then he's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys.
He might if you twist his arm.
Yep. He's and I have a feeling this could be the week for it.
Oh, because Jimmy Mack is here?
Yep.
Yeah, no porn talk, Jim, please.
That's a great theme. Who did that? Do we know?
That was our former
Jason Skaggs.
Production guy.
That was Jason.
Yes.
That's
who's
brilliant.
In Texas right now.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So, Dean, how
Jimmy
are
says
things?
That like he's shocked. Like, Jason did something
no,
good.
No, Dean. Jason is very talented, and I'm not surprised at all.
I like my spin better.
Yeah. We had a death in the news. Steve Bertrand reported that Max Wright, the father from Alf, has passed away.
Right.
And I was not a big Alf fan.
Neither was I.
Our youngest son, Dylan, has been binge-watching it lately. He's going to be devastated when he wakes up.
He likes it?
He loves Alf.
Really?
Buzz Kilman loved Alf, too. He was a big Alf fan.
I think we are a cult of two on this. I think that most people loved it. I thought it was the stupidest show that I had ever seen in my life. No disrespect to Max Wright.
No, but now, when Bertrand reported this death in the news, he was going to wait till Bill came back, because, you know, I don't know.
Oh, this is right in Bill's wheelhouse.
Yeah, and there was a dark time in Max Wright's life. Do you remember this? There was, like, he was dealing with orgies and crack. Do you remember this?
Who hasn't? Who hasn't?
That's just a weekend for Dean.
We call that Thursday.
God.
But I did not know that.
I found this information. It came out. I guess I shouldn't bring it up because really he's gone now. Why do you rehash
it's
bad
a lovely
stuff?
Obit that you're doing?
Yeah,
so far.
I know. I wonder why no one asked me to speak at their funerals. Max Wright dead at the age of 75. And
now,
also,
do you know that ALF, the name ALF, is an acronym for something else?
Alien life form.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly right.
Yes. Isn't that how Alf laughed? That's about all I know. And Billy Drago, I don't remember the Untouchables movie.
He was Nitty, and he got pushed off the rooftop at the end.
Spoiler!
Oh, shoot, sorry.
Alert.
I think enough decades have gone by that it's probably okay.
But he also passed away at the age of 73. That's not old enough, you guys.
Yeah, that's not very... Suddenly, it doesn't seem very old anymore.
No.
The movie was in 1987, which also doesn't seem like that long ago. I'm having a difficulty reconciling that things in the 80s are as long ago as they really were. Because don't they seem like yesterday?
It seems like a few years ago, I got to be honest with you, where I had half my head shaved and my hair spiked up. That was the 80s.
Me too.
A lot of leggings.
Me too.
Whenever I have friends in from out of town, they always want to see that stairwell at Union Station where the carriage rolled down.
That's very true.
And that hasn't changed one bit, that stairwell. So as the years pass by, at least the tourist, sightseeing.
Well, what, you expected them to fix it up? I mean, it's beautiful.
Well, I'm just saying. As time marches on.
Yeah, it's very classic. It's kind of cool that, I mean... You know, it's not like, just to interject the Jimmy Mac phrase here, it's not like it's Star Wars. It's the Untouchables, which is a big movie, but not legendary like that, that when people come to town, it's like, take me to Union Station. I have to see that stairwell. I've had that happen, too, where people want to see that stairwell.
Absolutely. It is pretty beautiful. I don't remember that movie at all. And then there was a TV show, The Untouchables. Wasn't Bill Leff on an episode of that, or am I imagining things?
Well, there was the classic show
with Robert
Stack.
Well,
no, not that. He wasn't on that episode. Maybe
would have been
fetus.
A little kid.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill. Yeah, aren't you Bill?
Say.
Yeah, you're Bill Leff, aren't you? Almost said Bill Veck.
You're going back to the 80s again,
aren't you? He wasn't there. Speaking of the 80s, you know who we had on the TV morning show today?
Oh,
it was just kooky. Taylor Dane.
Oh, my God. How is she doing?
Taylor Dane. She's fine. She looks good.
Didn't you just have Tiffany on?
We did have. Can you tell we're living in the past?
I'm all for it.
On this show, Tiffany was appearing with New Kids on the Block. And they were doing those shows, I think it was at the Allstate Arena. But Taylor Dane is part of this Pride in the Park that'll take place on Saturday in Grant Park with one of the sister sledges, one of the sisters, with one of the Braxtons, not Tony.
Oh, her sister, who was on a reality show, too.
Right.
She was on Celebrity Big Brother, wasn't
she? And also Iggy Azalea, that's kind of a big deal, that Iggy Azalea. But Taylor Dane was there, and I was like, oh, yeah, back in my DJ days, we played those like crazy. And I had to go back to look at the very long list of songs that Taylor Dane had, because all I could remember was Tell It to My Heart. But there were like Don't Rush Me, and that's all that I can remember from 2 hours ago.
I got to be honest with you, Dean. You were working at a hit station. I was playing classic rock, man.
Yeah.
So I wasn't all. I was more into Lita Ford than Taylor Dane.
No, I know. It's like whatever stations we were working at. What we remember, but that was, that was my entire wheelhouse of top 40 and adult contemporary.
Yes.
Light rock, as we used to call it.
It was that, the light, right? The light.
Turn us on. Well, no, I was never at the light. I was at Chicago's Light Rock, which now is The Mix.
Oh.
I was there in Fire Radio, the legendary Fire Radio.
WFYR.
WFYR. And then I slept through 3 years of smooth jazz.
Yeah. WNUA.
Yeah, right.
Do you know a lot about jazz? You learned it.
I did. Yeah, I did learn it. I knew about jazz. I didn't know about the music that they played.
I know Al Di Meola. I don't know other jazz artists really.
They were playing more of your like
David Sanborn.
Smooth jazz.
Yeah.
Is what it was.
Yeah, it was a lot of Kenny G. A lot of they're nice. They're nice.
To have dinner
jazz oriented instrumentals, because if you're talking jazz, you should be talking about Miles Davis and guys like that. And people, people who are real jazz fans wince when you put Kenny G into that category.
Well, the good news is you'll always hit the post, because there is no post in an instrumental.
Right.
You should have just talked over the whole song.
The intro on the song is 3.5 minutes long.
Right. The weather today, we're looking at a lot of sunshine.
Let's take a look at that 7-day forecast.
I would have loved it.
And nationally, let's go to airline delays.
You should start your own radio station.
Yeah, boy. Be fun.
All right, we have to take a quick break, and then there's a movie that we were talking about yesterday. Harry Tynowitz was sitting in for Bill. It's called Yesterday, and I can't get past the concept of this. So
in a bad way?
I really want to see it because it looks really good, and I know you have to suspend belief in a movie sometimes.
True.
But I just can't believe, like, you wake up one day and no one's heard of the Beatles. It's weird.
Well, you know, there also was no such creature in real life as Jabba the Hutt, but...
What?
Spoiler alert.
Hey, wait a second.
All right, we will take a quick break, and then we are back with Dean Richards, and Jim is in for Bill today. I'm Wendy at 720 WGN. We're talking to Dean Richards now.
We've got Taylor Dane for you now.
I do.
Yeah, 75 degrees outside, sunny with Tell It to My Heart.
I totally do remember this song.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, you got to hear those first few notes of the song.
How's she looking? She's always so attractive.
Yeah, she looks good. She looks fine. Do you know she opened for Michael Jackson? For
really?
The Bad Tour? Not a tour that was bad, but for his album called Bad. She was the opening act for Michael Jackson.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
And Prince. She opened for Prince for a while.
I remember that for some reason.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so we were talking about this movie. The premise is weird, but it looks like it's going to be really cute. Yesterday.
And it is really cute. And I think very charming and also very thoughtful at the same time. Now, here's the premise. Wendy says that you can't get past... the concept of one day you wake up and the Beatles never existed and no one's ever heard of a Beatles song except you. That's what this premise is. How are you with the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where George Bailey, you know, suddenly cannot, you know, he has to find out what the world would be like if he were not in it. You know, that's kind of how I look at this movie. It's about what it's focused on this one guy who was a struggling coffee house singer. He's not going anywhere in his career. There is a global power outage. He gets in a bicycle accident, and when he wakes up from all of this, he, you know, gets his guitar and he starts playing the song Yesterday, and somebody goes, what is that song? What is that? That's beautiful. What is that song? He goes, it's Yesterday. Never heard of it. It's the Beatles. Beatles like a bug or Beatles like a car is what, you know, what they say in the movie. So he, you know, is at this juncture in his life where he has to decide, he's a struggling musician. People are loving when he's playing Beatles songs because no one has ever heard these songs before. Does he continue this, you know, in his mind, a false premise? Do I take what really doesn't belong to me and take credit for it? Or do I just, you know, stop doing it and going back to being a struggling musician again? It also poses a question to me in a very clever and creative way, I think, is what if the things that are important to us in our life, what if the things that comprise our tastes, artistic tastes, suddenly didn't exist anymore? What would that mean in your life if things weren't there anymore? That's what this movie made me think about.
I like that thought.
It's a very cute and charming premise. Ed Sheeran plays himself in this movie, and he hears about this guy who's playing these songs that he goes, you know, these are beautiful songs that you're writing. You have to come on tour with me. And he goes on tour with Ed Sheeran. Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live plays his manager and starts managing this struggling musician trying to make him into an international superstar with these songs. And it's this movie is about what happens to this guy as he's going through these internal struggles, in addition to reminding us how timeless these Beatles songs are and how much a part of our lives these Beatles songs are. And just even sentences like the Beatles, the bug or the car, that, you know, that even, you know, can mean anything and make you laugh. It's very cleverly written. It's directed by Danny Boyle. There is a young actor whose name is Hamish Patel, who is the struggling singer. Lily Collins, who is Phil Collins' daughter, is the co-star of this movie for a sweet little love story in it. I liked it very much. I gave it a Dean's List B+.
Oh, all right. Well, I need to see it. Is Kate McKinnon her goofy self, or is it a pretty straight role for
her? No,
she
is an over-the-top Hollywood, obnoxious Hollywood-type manager, a pariah who, you know, is ready to chew up this guy and spit him out, you know, for her own financial benefit. She is very funny in this movie. And Ed Sheeran's, you know, kind of mocking himself. He gets into a songwriting contest with this guy. Okay, let's see who can write the best song right now. Who can write the best song? So Ed Sheeran comes up with a little something, and then... the you know, the struggling musician plays, you know, something in the way you move, you know, some classic Beatles love song that blows everybody away. It's like, you are the most genius songwriter I've ever had.
It sounds good. All right, and for the horror fans out there, Annabelle Comes Home.
Yeah, thank God, because we don't have enough movies in the theater right now. Featuring kids' dolls possessed by an evil spirit.
Yeah, that's very true, because we have Child's Play that's out there right now. Isn't there one more that may have gone down
Beasley?
Mrs. Beasley.
That was thrown in for Bill Love.
Nice.
That would be a great spin-off.
Wow. Family Affair.
Hello, I'll take Obscurity for $200, Alex. Family Affair for $200.
Yes. Also, Bill.
So, Annabelle, which is... it's part of the Conjuring franchise.
Yeah.
That's like part of that scene. And it has no relation to Child's Play at all.
None whatsoever.
Okay.
Except that it's just a creepy looking doll. This is actually, believe it or not, the third of this Annabelle series of Conjuring and Annabelle. This is the third one now. Annabelle Comes Home is the name of it. This doll, it's not like it's wielding a knife like Chucky or anything. This doll pretty much just sits there but has the creepiest look on its face. The thing is that this Annabelle doll turns out is a portal for evil. So wherever this doll is, evil is attracted to it and wants to... exactly. There could not be better musical notes to go with this. Wherever this doll is, bum bum bum, there is evil that follows and wants to steal your soul.
Oh my God.
So the doll has to be kept in this special glass case, but wouldn't you know it, a friend of the babysitter in the house where this doll is being kept is snooping around the house and accidentally opens the glass case, and you guessed it, all kinds of evil is released into the world. And what happens after that really is kind of a very formula horror movie. There are a couple of funny moments in it. It's mostly just extremely formula and the kind of horror movie that you've seen 100 times before. At least it's not messy. It's not gory, bloody. Mm-hmm. It's more suspense filled than anything else. So I give that one a Dean's List C+. Did you guys see Avengers Endgame?
Yes, I did.
I did not.
Wendy,
I got to see the one before that. What was that?
Infinity Wars.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little behind.
Only by a few years.
You know that's how I roll, Dean.
I did. That's why when I asked the question, I figured Jim probably did.
Yeah,
and you probably didn't. But they're going to put Avengers Endgame back in theaters this weekend with some previously unseen footage.
Oh.
So if you are a Marvel fan, if you're an Avengers fan, if you're crazy about this, they're putting the directors, Joe and Anthony Russo, have put some scenes in that you did not see before, and those will be in theaters. I don't know for how long, but I think they're trying to goose up the box office numbers a little bit to see if they can get it. Right now, it's the number two grossing movie of all time, and I think they're trying to get it to beat Avatar by doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm off tomorrow, so is Bill, so maybe I'll watch Infinity Wars tonight and then go to the movie theater to see Endgame.
Go see Yesterday.
Yeah, I really do want to see that.
It's really a very sweet movie. Really, very, very sweet. I mean, if you're in an action movie kind of mode, I'm kind of curious to see what these new scenes are that they put into Endgame, but I don't know if I have 3 hours to commit to this again.
Because
it was a long movie to begin
with. Is it that long? I get theater ass anything over two.
Yeah, you're going to get theater ass plus now.
All right. Well, thank you, Dean. Have a great weekend.
By the way, it was my first radio name, by the way, Theater Ass. Back when I was on Fire Radio. Yeah, Theater Ass playing Taylor Dane for you, baby.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dean. Have a good one. See
thanks, Dean.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, WGN Radio.